You know, one of the things the NHL really doesn't like is when NHL teams drop huge news on a game day in the playoffs. The Montreal Canadiens, one game away from qualifying for the Stanley Cup final. As we were all set to talk about that and the Islanders' victory last night, the Seattle Kraken announced today that Dave Hakstol will be their very first coach. Hakstol, of course, former assistant coach with the Toronto Maple Leafs and former head coach of the Philadelphia Flyers, was bench boss at the University of North Dakota. So automatically we think of TJ Oshie. If Washington exposes him in the expansion draft, we think of players like James Van Riemsdyk with the Philadelphia Flyers, who Hakstol would have had while he was there. Plenty of grist for the mill as it relates to Seattle and their initial hiring. If you missed the news, Dave Hakstol will be their first coach. Welcome to the program, Jeff Merrick alongside Anthony Stewart and Justin Bourne. Before we get to tonight, and it's a whopper in this country, before we get to last night, which was a whopper at the Coliseum, Justin Bourne and Anthony Stewart, good afternoon. What do you make of this news? Dave Hakstol, now ex of the Maple Leafs, head coach of the Seattle Kraken, Stewie.
Well, I'm going to be the first to admit, but I guarantee you there's other people in the hockey world, when they heard Hakstol, they're like, I thought he was already the GM of the Pittsburgh Penguins, but that's not to be confused with Ron Hextall. So again, I'm admitting that, but you know, it's a non-conventional hire, but I think the Seattle Kraken have proven that they're a non-conventional organization, and they made a lot of outside-the-box hires throughout many of their departments. So they're showing that they're a progressive organization, and I like seeing a guy get an opportunity. Here he is, first-time head coach of the National Hockey League at 52 years old.
Mid-season
replacement, Jeff.
He was the head coach of the Philadelphia. It wasn't just a replacement with the Philadelphia Flyers. Dave Hakstol was the head coach of the Philadelphia Flyers for four seasons.
Okay,
it's all good.
But anyways, I stand corrected. I have no problem admitting that I was wrong, but thank you for correcting me for our listeners. But again, there was other names on that list, and probably I don't think anyone thought he was going to be the head coach here. But again, it's a progressive organization. They're making a non-conventional hire. All the best to him.
Yeah, Justin? I played against his North Dakota teams a little bit in college, and you know, they were always very talented, but also very well structured. I think what strikes me here is when a guy hasn't had a ton of success as a head coach, he sometimes gets written off as a guy who shouldn't get another opportunity, or you know, people might be surprised when he gets hired again. But there's no better training than learning on the job sometimes. And this is a guy who, you know, had that experience with Philly. And I look at other coaches who had a mediocre first run and success after that. You know, Bruce Cassidy, Peter DeBoer, Mike Sullivan, all these guys learned from their first experiences and came back better coaches. He's had, you know, a long run with the Leafs. I guess not a long run with the Leafs, but a couple years with the Leafs after the Flyers experience. And I think there's no reason to think that this guy wouldn't have all the tools necessary to be a quality head coach in the league.
We'll talk to Elliot Friedman about this from 31 Thoughts and Hockey Night in Canada at the bottom of the hour. The news of the day, Dave Hakstol is the new/first head coach in the history of the Seattle Kraken organization. They made that official earlier on with a press release, and there is a press conference scheduled for a little bit later on. Now, from the Toronto Maple Leafs' point of view, that leaves a vacancy. You know, it's interesting. We'll get into this with Friedge at the bottom of the hour on the 31 Thoughts podcast. I can't remember which one it was. They all sort of flow together. From a couple of podcasts ago, Elliot mentioned something about Maple Leafs coaches being offered what would be considered more prominent positions or promotions from other organizations. And I'd be curious to see if they ended up leaving. I'm assuming one of the people he was referencing was Dave Hakstol, which leaves the bench a little bit thin. Manny Malhotra still there. We think of Paul McLean. And, you know, you have to wonder, from a Maple Leafs point of view, if they're looking to fill that Dave Hakstol spot. You know, I think, Justin, and you would know him from your time with the Marlies and Sheldon Keefe, I would imagine that A.J. McLean's name would have to come up here probably right away. Would you think?
Certainly where my mind went. You know, I am curious to see, just because, you know, are they going to go all the way in on this Kyle Dubas plan, vision, culture, people thing? Or, you know, they showed last year with the type of players they added that he was willing to deviate from his previous sort of plans, which was youth and speed and skill and, you know, everything, the type of guys he signed did not fit that mold. You know, I previously would have expected this to just be like, oh, well, then this is the opportunity for AJ. You know, he's been the chance he's been waiting for. But now, you know, I'm just not 100% sure that they're not going to look again. You know, Manny Malhotra is a fairly new coach in the NHL. Paul McLean, you know, is their eye in the sky. I don't know what if he wants a role like that. Like, would they want another veteran guy who's been around and been through it, particularly because Sheldon is a, you know, still a fairly new coach in the NHL as well.
What do you think about the Maple Leafs bench now, Stewie? How attractive a position is this?
Yeah, I could see them bringing in a veteran guy. And the one thing I do know, I'm not going to pretend I'm an insider, but I do know when they did hire Malhotra, there were some younger candidates, some first-time guys that were up for the job that they decided to go with a more experienced guy just because the stakes were too high. So I could see them now that they have Malhotra, maybe adding a Bruce Boudreau. Why not add a veteran voice when things go wrong in a game or you know, something's struggling, a guy that's been around for 15, 20, 25 years that could come in and stabilize? Because you know, you have a young guy, a couple of young guys here. Why not get an older guy on the bench that can maybe add a different perspective?
That's a really interesting name. And Boudreau before has talked about Toronto being the only team that he would be interested in working as an assistant, not a head coach. Like, look, he grew up in the area, played for the Marlies, won Memorial Cup, drafted by the Maple Leafs, played for the Maple Leafs. Like, that's an interesting name you bring up, Stewie. You know, there was a go-around once upon a time with the Maple Leafs and Bruce Boudreau. Didn't work out. You wonder if they revisit that conversation now. That is an interesting point and layer on this one. Okay, to the news from last night, before we get to tonight, and tonight we can't underscore, tonight is huge. A Canadian team is one win away from qualifying for the Stanley Cup final. The Montreal Canadiens, leading the series 3-2, can close it out tonight at home in Montreal. 8 o'clock Eastern is the puck drop. Well, shortly thereafter, pregame program. Hockey Central gets underway at 7:30 with your host, Ron McLean. But before we do that, Justin Bourne, your Islanders last night.
How about
Justin
that,
Bourne,
eh?
Your Islanders down 2-0 last night. Justin Bourne, your Islanders winning in overtime early. Anthony Beauvillier says, don't worry about staying up late tonight, everybody. I got this. Series tied at threes. We're going to a game 7. 3-2 is the final. Tins of beer on the ice. Someone threw a shoe on the ice, which is always interesting to see that.
Mike Milbury.
Maybe it was Milbury in the crowd. That's a good one, Stewie. Islanders royalty, Mike Milbury there. What did you make of last night, Bourne? I mean, you're the Islanders guy here on the panel. Give us your take.
Well, I just think it's wild how, you know, the reputation of them as a boring team just gets blown apart. Like, when they're down a couple of goals against the defending cup champions, they're able to find another gear and just pound it to them. You know, the latter half of that game was all Islanders, and, you know, Tampa was basically left to hope Vasilevsky could be otherworldly. Scott Mayfield, I don't think I've ever seen him place a puck like that in his entire NHL career. Kiss it off the elbow.
Whew. What a shot.
I mean, and Barzal had the puck for half of the third period, so... Yeah, I mean, unbelievable finish. You know, for me as a you know, my Islanders ties and all that, the opportunity for them to go out of the Coliseum with a win would be just the most meaningful thing. I mean, look, I would take a loss if it happened to be in the Stanley Cup final and they won it on the road or something, but it was pretty special. And I love the celebration. Beer cans on the ice. Get out of here if you could pretend to care about that. The fans are just losing their marbles. Let them lose their marbles. No one got hurt.
What do you think, Stewie?
Yeah, I'm just surprised by the relentlessness and the composure. And, you know, you lose 8-0 the game before, you're down 2-0, and no one would fault you for packing it in and just showing that composure to come back. And, you know, I texted you, Jeff, last night after the Cirelli goal. Usually that's a backbreaker and the game's done. But for them to come back from there with a big goal by Eberle, and it's just definitely those are makings of a Stanley Cup contending team too. And what I love about Barzal is I teach the tight turns in the offensive zone, and I probably overteach it, but, you know, he's giving, I think he's he's going to be making me some more money now, because it's showing that it is very game specific, just how he's twisting and turning with that puck, holding on to it. So definitely his analytics have gone up, but it's been a great series. Definitely very impressed by both teams, but just that composure and never say die attitude by the Islanders, definitely something we'll be talking about for years to come.
That was clinic time for Barzal in the third yesterday. That was spectacular by Barzal. And, you know, you mentioned that Anthony Cirelli goal. So point scores is 14th. And he's gotten 9 games in a row with a goal. Reggie Leach looking your direction at 10 to tie the record. The thing about the Cirelli goal, you know, Stewie, as you mentioned, like, that's the backbreaker. That came right after the 5-on-3 penalty kill by Tampa. And you guys know what, A, killing that off means, and then B, when you score right after that, Cirelli's fourth goal of the playoffs, you're right, like, Justin, at that point, and, you know, you mentioned, you know, like your dad, your father-in-law, the organization you played for, like your Islanders ties and all that, Cirelli scores that thing after the 5-on-3 kill. Was there not a part of you that said, oh, that's it, Islanders are done?
Well, definitely a part of me where you start bargaining with yourself, like, hey, look, it was still an unbelievable run, you know, like, still a lot to be proud of here. You know, start trying to talk yourself into it.
The offseason, who are they going to keep, who's coming back.
Right. Yeah, I would say part of my brain went there, but to Stewie's point, like, that's great resiliency and leadership for the team to be able to not just say it's night-night time, but be able to mount that next push.
You know, you talked about that Mayfield goal, and that was the one that tied it 2-2. Perfect shot over Vasilevskiy's shoulder. Like, it's a gorgeous shot. But again, the guy that made that happen is Matthew Barzal. And we saw Jordan Eberle scored that's always that goal that you want to get before the period ends. I mean, you guys played, you guys talk about this kind of stuff right away. Man, getting one right before the buzzer is huge for a team. Going into the third, if you're down 2 pucks, is a lot different than we just need to get one. Stewie, Eberle scores that goal last night to make it 2-1. What does that do to the Islanders bench?
It says, hey guys, we're in this game. And before then, you know, they had some opportunities, but Vasilevskiy looked like he was on his way to a shutout. But that was a really good cut and drop play there too. And it's funny that the announcers, I think, said it maybe 30 or 40 seconds before, saying, hey, you need to get one before the period's ending. And usually when you say that, it doesn't happen. But as a team, when you're down 2 against the defending Stanley Cup champions, I've been there a couple of games where I'm like, you know what, guys, it was a nice run. Let's start booking our tee times. But to get that goal now, you feel the energy on the bench. You feel it where you're like, you know what, we're in this game, and you get momentum back. And that was the key. They didn't really have any momentum, especially, you know, not scoring on the 5-on-3 and some other key power plays. And to get that momentum back, you know, I don't think many people were surprised that they were going to tie it up. I thought that game was going into overtime, probably, you know, in that second intermission.
You know, Mayfield was an interesting story yesterday. One, for the goal. Two, for the cross-check to Nikita Kucherov, to say nothing of his inspired violent play against Steven Stamkos as the second period came to a conclusion. The hot button issue there, and John Cooper said there's no update on him today. That is the injury to Nikita Kucherov, the cross check by Mayfield. Now, Kucherov did go after Barzal after that, missed them awkwardly into the boards, but it does very much look like the injury occurred on the cross check. Again, I don't know for sure, but have a look at the play. It certainly looks like that's the one that injured him. What did you make of the Mayfield cross check? I know, here we go, auditing officials again, but there it is. That's Chris Lee standing in front of him one more time. It's the first shift of Kucherov's game, and he's out for the remainder of the game. Cross checks kind of exist in two places, a penalty and not a penalty. And it's all up to the referee's discretion. What did you make of that cross check last night? Was it the right call?
You know, there's probably enough violence in it that it's a penalty.
But you know what I mean, right? Like some cross checks happen like all game long. Every part of the ice, in front of the net, in the corners, along the boards, like everywhere, there are cross checks. happens all game long. As a referee, you just decide, okay, which one rises to the level of violence where I'm happy putting this thing in my mouth that makes a sound.
Yeah, and you know, it's, I would say if you isolate that incident and watch it, you say, yeah, it's cross check. I gave him 2 minutes for that. But, you know, it's just knowing that it's playoffs and all this, like, you know, the different standard that we talk about. Guys are harder on each other. There's just more going on. I could see how it doesn't go called. I feel this is one of the times I feel like a bit of a dinosaur. And maybe this is a bit Islanders bias, too, because I looked at that and I was like, yeah, it's probably a penalty. It was not that bad. Like, it didn't bother me all that much. I don't know. What do you think, Stewie?
As long as it's not in the neck or the face, it's everything's game, cross-checking. Next question. But I just don't get the outrage. I just don't get the outrage about the officiating, and it's awful, it's brutal. It's like officiating in every sport's been awful and brutal for the last 50 years. So why are we now, you know, putting the microscope on the refs in the National Hockey League? I don't get it. And, you know, every week it just seems to be something else. And the playoffs, there is a different standard of officiating. We know that. The media knows that. The players know that. The teams know. Everybody knows that. So why are we complaining about it? So if you want to make a change, get the GMs together in a room and talk about that. But I don't get the constant complaining and bickering and people saying, well, that's not the way the game's supposed to be. But that's the way the game is. And that's the game I was growing up to be. And again, I understand it now that I'm a parent and coach of young kids, but this is a contact sport, and sometimes you do get hurt. But do you want to be cross-checking guys in the teeth, in the face? No. I lost my teeth when I was 16 years old in the OHL. I learned that lesson the hard way. But again, it is a physical sport. You hate to see guys get hurt, but I think there's a lot bigger issues right now that we need to get out of the game than worrying about some cross-checks to the back, whether it's on a downward violent motion or horizontal motion. Cross-checking, number 6 on the list. Next to everything else.
Do you think, though, that there's an audit coming on cross checks? I mean, specifically around the boards. You know, it wasn't that
solution.
Long ago. What's that?
Paper mache sticks. So if you now break your stick, if you cross check a guy, paper mache, and then now you're gonna
everybody uses 60 flex sticks. Everyone's got a wet noodle in their hands. All you can do is take snappers, and that's it.
I'm playing in that league. No, bring me back.
No more,
I love it.
No more crowbars. But I mean, you guys can all recall. Oh, I think Johnny Gaudreau was the touchstone for this one. I can't remember from Minnesota caught him, but there was a rash of broken fingers, and all of a sudden the standard about any sticks around the hands was going to get called every single time. And that's pretty much consistent to right now. We saw that.
Yeah, they've been great at that.
They've stuck with that. I just wonder if the next area that they attack in the off season or spend more attention with is cross-checking. Just because we have seen so many injuries around it. And now Kucherov's another one.
There's got to be some differentiating between going at someone with a cross check or absorbing someone with a cross check. By that I mean, if you're at the front of the net and someone is skating to you at the net, like, you need to be able to cross check to push off on them. You can't just, you know, invite them to the net. You can't take your hands off your stick to push them. So there's got to be some leeway when you're absorbing a player. But when, like Mayfield, you're pursuing a player or go cross checking a player who is not engaged with you going the other way, that to me is where the difference lies.
Is there an issue that Nikita Kucherov is a quote-unquote star player? We've talked a lot about protecting stars and double standards.
The NHL not doing it?
And that's the thing. Like, historically, the NHL has looked at all players and said, you are all eligible for contact. You are all eligible for heavy contact. If there's an injury, so be it. You're a superstar. You're a fourth liner. We make no distinction. But now we may be going into a game 7 without Nikita Kucherov. I don't know if the game's better off that way at all.
No. You know, while Stewie's suggesting bad ideas, maybe we can give 3 players like a yellow jersey. These are the guys you can't hit on our team.
No.
These are contact exempt players.
But that's what I don't get, and that's the thing that people don't understand. Like, especially in the dressing room, there's no classism of players. There's no superstars, you know, maybe within the coaching staff, but within the players, there is none. There is no. Everyone is the same. Everyone is ranked the same. Everyone's treated the same. So I don't get that. Well, we have to protect this guy, but if it's okay to hit that guy, that's okay. I don't get that part of it. I don't get that. So I could be
not
well-versed, but I just don't understand that part of it. No.
All right, so we'll leave that one until tomorrow when we'll see a Game 7 between the Islanders and the Tampa Bay Lightning. Again, Elliot Friedman at the bottom of the hour. If you missed the big news of the day, Dave Hakstol is the hire. It's official. He's the guy, new head coach, first head coach in the history of the Seattle Kraken organization. Tonight, Game 6, Montreal up 3-2. The Bell Center, the entire hockey world transfixed on Montreal tonight. Pregame gets underway at 7:30. That's Hockey Central with your host, Ron McLean. The puck drops just after 8 on Sportsnet and CBC. It's the Vegas Golden Knights and the team that can punch their ticket to the final, the Montreal Canadiens. Have we learned anything up until this point about this ride by the Habs? We talk about Montreal every day. I know it's our job to come up with something new to say about the Montreal Canadiens every day, but I don't know how much more we can say about this run other than it's pretty inspiring. Not many people predicted it. It's a team that refuses to be counted out of any game or any series for that matter. Justin Bourne, what do you do with this? We're at a Game 6 between the Habs and the Knights.
Well, I guess my question that I asked about Montreal before the series has flipped to Vegas. Like I said about Montreal, like where are the goals going to come from? Vegas gave up the fewest goals in the NHL this year. Montreal is not an offensive powerhouse. How is Montreal going to score enough? And, you know, excuse me for not seeing the answer being like Paul Byron is going to score a bunch. But, you know, it's now on Vegas. Like, where is the goals going to come from? Alex Pietrangelo cannot do it all himself. Mark Stone's got nothing. Marchessault's got nothing. None of the guys up top have nothing. You can't play six hockey games and then have nothing and expect to win. So are they going to show up?
Stewie.
Yeah, one of my key points was Josh Anderson had to be the Alex Tuck of this series, and I think he stole his powers because he's been the Alex Tuck of this series, and just his speed and again, they got different guys stepping up at different times, and I think that's the making of a real team destined to go all the way too. And you know, they got some veteran guys, but what I like about it, and it goes back to last year in the bubble, of getting guys like Suzuki and Kotkaniemi that experience, putting them in major roles, giving them some major ice time. You know, some guys went down to the minors, they had to work on their craft, but when they came back up, they were put in a position to succeed. And say what you want about Kotkaniemi, he's a great third line guy. Caulfield, you know, he had to pay his dues a bit, but now he is playing major roles. So it's that combination of veteran guys that have been there and know exactly what it takes to win, and you know, your young guys having major roles. So those combination of young and old, I call it the old teams, I think those are the ones that are going to have success in the playoffs. But for Montreal, I stopped doubting them, you know, when I was laughing my dad out of the building down 3-1 saying they were going to come back and beat the Leafs. So since then, I'm a believer, and I will not be surprised if they win tonight.
Your dad knows. I just love how in today's day and age, the idea of paying your dues is playing in the AHL for a month and then getting scratched two games to start the playoffs.
Like, I'm still in the minors.
That's now paying your dues. We should point out as well, Robin Lehner for the Vegas Golden Knights was in the starter's net this morning at the Bell Center. So as we talked about yesterday with Brian Boucher, agree or disagree with this one, Borny. Vegas wins this one. This is Robin Lehner's net. It's his, period, right?
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, barring an injury, I don't expect to see Marc-Andre Fleury till the Stanley Cup final, and that would take Vegas winning a couple hockey games. So, yeah, I guess even then you think Lehner would keep going. So, yeah, I think it's the right call, right? He went into Montreal and won a hockey game the last time they asked him to, and he was pretty darn spectacular doing it. Their backs are against the wall, and it's like the old pull out all the stops you got here. You don't want to leave something in the bag. So I think it's the right call here.
You know,
Jeff's upset. But anyways, I said when they put him in game four, I think it was just a test with him sitting around for almost a calendar month to really see what he had left in the tank. And I think he passed that test. And when he did and he got that win, I think they should have kept him in the lineup. But it's a good problem to have. Two good goaltenders that can do the job. But it's Leonard's crease now to lose, and they're going to need him to come up big if they want to stay in the series here.
Technology is our friend. We've done shows together away from the radio station now for a year and change. Isn't it wonderful? Nick Holden, Nick Holden skating with the extras today at Vegas practice. It sounds very much like Nick Hague. Locally, people here in the GTA will know him as Mississauga Steelhead. Nick Hague, James Richmond, look in your direction. Help finish him up for the pro game. Looks like Nick Hague will be back in. He last played game four against the Colorado Avalanche. So it looks like Holden out and Nick Hague is in. But other than that and the Robin Leonard change, the song remains the same. Like, I don't know how much more we can talk about Vegas here. Like, it's shades of last season. Where have the goals gone? It's, you know, Marchessault. It's Smith. It's Pacioretty, albeit he did score a goal in the previous game. It's Mark Stone. It's all of these guys that if you're Vegas, this is your time. Like, this is your time. Alex Pietrangelo has been the best player on the Vegas Golden Knights from the opening puck drop of game one. So that's a given. You know what you're going to get with Alex Pietrangelo. I don't think anybody knows what we're getting from the top six tonight. And a lot of this, and Borny, you've talked about this before, has been the shutdown work. Like, you look at the Montreal Canadiens and what they do and how they do it. The shutdown work that the Montreal Canadiens and specifically Philippe Deneau have done on the top lines of the Vegas Golden Knights, that should not go without comments. That has been the story of this series, in my estimation. Your thoughts?
And because of the work they've done, they've really put Vegas in a position where, you know, you guys talked earlier in the show about the frustration, where the frustration is so self-evident that if Montreal can keep Vegas quiet for the first half of this game, I like their odds. You know, I think you'll see that again. It's going to be a big Vegas push early, like, okay, this is it, backs against the wall. If Montreal is just, even through that, able to keep them quiet again, I mean, man, I just can't imagine the frustration level is going to help Vegas open things up and find their offense.
Stewie?
Yeah, and usually when the top six is struggling, you know, it's usually the power play where you get a couple cookies to help get you, you know, get the monkey off your back too. But the power play now, that's a recipe for disaster. And the main reason why a lot of these guys are frustrated and they can't score. You're looking at a guy like Mark Stone, who's the captain of the team, slamming doors, breaking sticks, and you can even see the frustration in the face of Pete DeBoer, where he's ripping his mask off in between intermissions. So I'm sure they're doing a lot of preparation, but they just can't break through the wall that is the Montreal Canadiens. So it's a tough, tough task, but you know, that's why they get paid the big bucks. And I think when you do an autopsy, if they lose this series, it's going to be the big guns did not step up, and that you can't win a cup that way for sure.
And that is some high-priced help. We're going to hit a break on that. We're on the other side, joined by Elliot Friedman of Hockey Night in Canada and 31 Thoughts. Don't go anywhere. We'll get on the Kraken page here in a second. Dave Hakstol leaves the Toronto Maple Leafs bench to become Seattle's new and first head coach. That story and plenty more with Elliot Friedman as Hockey Central continues on Sportsnet 590 The Fan. Welcome back to the program here Monday to Friday starting at noon. Quick note, the Toronto Six of the NWHL announcing today that Hall of Famer Angela James is joining the bench. She will serve as an assistant coach with that organization. Welcome back to Hockey Central. Jeff Merrick alongside Anthony Stewart and Justin Bourne. We'll pick up the conversation about coaches with our good friend Elliot Friedman from 31 Thoughts on Hockey Night in Canada. Friedge, Dave Hakstol is the new slash first head coach for the Seattle Kraken. How did they keep us all off the scent?
You know, Ron Francis is pretty good at that. He's always operated in kind of a veil of secrecy. To be honest, I didn't hear Haxtell's name linked to them until this morning. I'd started to hear yesterday that it probably wasn't going to be Rick Tocchet, that Seattle had gone in another direction. You know, we talked last Saturday night and briefly on the podcast about Toronto assistant coaches having other opportunities, and I heard Haxtell was one of them.
Yeah.
But I didn't think Seattle. I was actually thinking more Buffalo. And then someone sent me a note this morning saying, look into Hakstol. And someone else sent me a note saying, have Ron Francis and Dave Hakstol ever worked together? And you figured out it was the 2019 World Championships where Canada won a silver medal. And it just kept going and going and going. And you know, you know how it is, guys. Like you're 99% sure, but there's always that 1% of doubt that creeps into you and gets you. And you know, that's the one thing you're always worried against. You don't want to be wrong.
So the one place where my brain went when we found out that it was going to be Dave Haxtell was, what does this mean for the expansion draft? And does this mean that they would claim TJ Oshie from the Washington Capitals, James Van Riemsdyk from the Philadelphia Flyers, players that Dave Haxtell has coached before? Am I way overthinking this one, Elliot?
No, I don't think you are, because, you know, I think you obviously... You know, what's the old rule? The GM picks the roster and the coach picks who plays. I don't necessarily think that always works anymore. I think there has to be cohesion. I think there has to be understanding. I'm sure that Haxtell will have his vote. I mean, I don't necessarily think it guarantees, like, Seattle's still going to squeeze these teams. You know, one of the reasons I do wonder if Ovechkin isn't signed is it possible that they're worried about their expansion draft? We know that Philly wants to make some changes and wants to move some bodies out to make some room for some fresh people. But that doesn't mean that, you know, Seattle's just going to take someone like Van Riemsdyk simply because Haxtell knows him. The extortion is underway. The interest payments are high, Jeff. So I understand why we all connect these dots, but, you know, you still have to pay the teeth, I guess, as it is.
Stewie.
Well, he last was a head coach in 2018-2019. What type of head coach is he, and what can they be expecting with Seattle with their new guy?
Well, I think that, you know, the one thing that Haxtell definitely is he's very cerebral. He's very cerebral. He's a thinker. He's somebody that doesn't, you know, he feels that, I think he's somebody who really considers things. He doesn't like making rash, emotional decisions. You know, one of the things that someone was saying to me was, you know, he was a guy who got put into a situation in Philly where there were a lot of veterans, and they were used to a certain way, and it wasn't easy for someone to come in there from outside and mix with that. And they think that because this is a situation where Haxtell will kind of be there first and have some formation, as Jeff talked about, in molding the group, that this will be different. I mean, I'm always curious to see how someone does in their second chance. What do they learn? What worked? What didn't work? And the word that I get a lot, Anthony, was cerebral, and that he was a thinker more than an emotional guy. Somebody who said, this is what we're going to do, as opposed to convincing someone, you're going to run through that wall over there and you're going to do it fast, and the player is going to do it without question. So I'm curious to see, does he still take that same approach, or does he mix some different things into that?
Frege, it's only a matter of time before they replace
him. I forgot. I didn't realize, because I was on the phone, I didn't realize the arsonists were together today.
Don't worry, we're creating fires here. You'll get to work
later. What are you guys burning down this afternoon? I wasn't able to listen for the first 30 minutes.
Boudreaux to Toronto.
Yeah.
Replace Haxtell. He'd love that. He'd love that.
Well, that's it. I have two settings. I have setting fires and then being a robot that says, what does this mean for the Toronto Maple Leafs? That's all I want to know. So I'm on the Maple Leaf setting. What does this mean for the Maple Leafs?
Well, I think there's going to be a ton of interest. I do. I think that, you know, first of all, the Maple Leafs, they're an organization that supports people well. They pay well, they support well. Like, you don't come here, and you can never come here and say you don't have what it takes to be successful. They do whatever they can to make their team successful, and they're willing to put the resources into it. So, number one, there's a lot of interest. Number two, I think also, you know, that the rewards here are great. If you are successful, I mean, people can look at it half empty and say, if it goes badly, nobody escapes the carnage, right? But I always look at it the other way. If it goes well, the rewards are high because everybody sees it. So, you know, I think number one, Hextall was penalty killing in defense. Do they look for someone who could do penalty killing in defense, or are they going to go? Are they going to shuffle the responsibilities among the coaches? I think also, I'm just curious if there are any other Toronto coaches interviewing anywhere. I heard there was the possibility of maybe two. So we'll see where that kind of goes, and you know, we'll go from there. But Justin, there's going to be a lot of interest in this job. There's going to be a lot of coaches. And yes, Anthony too, Boudreau would be at the front of it. He would love to work for the Toronto Maple Leafs.
So that's the Seattle story. If you missed the news, Dave Hextall is their first coach, as named a little bit earlier on today. Also around the NHL, let's do Montreal first. If we have time to get to the Islanders, Tampa, we will. Montreal on the verge of doing something special. Canadian team, we haven't seen one in the Stanley Cup final, going back to 2011 with the Vancouver Canucks. But here we are, and I'll ask you the same question I asked the guys off the top of the show. How did we get here?
Well, you know, I think that, you know, it's interesting. I asked the Sportsnet stat guys, how many teams have reached the Stanley Cup final after finishing the regular season 0-5? Mm-hmm. And it used to never happen, and it's actually kind of happened a bit in the last few years. Chicago, when they won the Cup in 2015, they finished 0-4. And last year, actually, Dallas, before the pause, the pandemic pause, I think they finished 0-4-2. So it used to never happen. It happens a bit more now. But, you know, I think that what kind of happened is that they accepted an identity. And, you know, Justin, I know you always say, what does this mean for the Maple Leafs? But I know that you bleed Islanders, right? Mm-hmm. And there's no team in the NHL now that probably has a more distinct identity than the Islanders. They know who they are. They know what they do. They know what everybody's role is, and they accept it. And that's why they're in Game 7 of the Eastern Conference Final. I think now I called them Islanders light. Some Canadian fans are getting really offended at that. One of them said, one of them actually sent me a DM. I think his name was Roger Soucy. He says, if we win and the Islanders lose, he says, you have to start calling us Islanders extra strength. So I will do that. But I think they've accepted an identity. Everybody, like, you know, they know what their roles are. They know what they have to play, how they have to play. They make it extremely difficult for you to get to the net. Those top 4D are nasty pieces of work that make it really hard. And if you make a mistake, they've got enough talent to bury it. And at the end, they've got the human eraser there, Price. So I think the Canadians have adopted an identity, and they have stuck to that identity. Like, you know, the first goal the other night, the 1-0 goal, the breakaway goal, they looked like they were in trouble in their zone, and they made, you know, three perfect passes. Everybody knew where the other guy was supposed to be, and it's in the Vegas net. And, you know, I just think they understand the roles they have to play, and they play it to perfection. And I on the road, they should have beaten Vegas. They should have beaten Vegas three times on the road in this series. They've been so good on the road. And I just think that's because they play the same at home. They play the same on the road, and that works in this league.
The Habs have definitely exceeded expectations, but that market is a different market than the rest in the league here. So is it safe to say, regardless if they win the series or not, that everyone within management and coaching staff is safe for next year?
I think so. You know, Mark Bergevin had one more year left on his deal. John Sedgwick, who's Bergevin's right-hand man, and, you know, the sort of like the brains behind the operation there, he got a 3-year extension. They announced it yesterday. That says, now, we've talked about Anthony. I believe that Bergevin has had an extension on his desk for some time. Since Sedgwick got 3 years, I tend to believe that Bergevin is in the same boat. I just think the biggest question was, would he want to do it? Was there any chance that he was burned out and maybe said enough is enough? But I think, you know, if he has another year on his contract, I think now just the question is, how long is the extension going to be for? This has validated almost every choice he made. And I think Ducharme, you know, the guy I'm really happy for is Luke Richardson. You know, this is a guy who never got mentioned in any coaching jobs around for years. And I wonder if this is, I really wonder if this is, you know, the path for him. Like, people are going to look at this and say, wow, like, maybe this is another guy that we should be considering.
I have to tell you too about Montreal.
One of my good buddies lives there. It's Saint Jean Baptiste Day today.
Yes,
he's already texted me and said it's 12:45. He's like, I don't know if I'm going to make it to game time tonight. It is going to be it is going to be a zoo there tonight. It's going to be crazy.
Well, that's dead tied to my
lots of puddles around Montreal. If you know what I mean.
Yeah, yeah. Go ahead. I was just dead tied to my question. Just like, okay, so they win tonight. Are they really going to have a Canadian team in the Stanley Cup final in front of 3,500 people? Like, not happening, right?
I think that is a tremendous question, Justin. I really do. I'm very curious to see what this is going to be. Like, you know, the league's kind of fortunate here. We really dodged a bullet with Ducharme and you hope he's okay, and McCrimmon, and you hope he's okay. You know, the fact that this hasn't turned into anything with the players, I think the Canadian government was really unhappy about the non-mask wearing by the Golden Knights in Canada. You know, we've been fortunate, Justin, in this series. You know, there were 24 to 48 to 72 very nervous hours there. So I am curious to see where that's going to go.
Off of this page, really quickly, what do we expect and what do we see into the future for the Vancouver Canucks situation coming off the heels of the Sedins announcement? We probably haven't parked enough time on this show to talk about it, but here we are.
Well, I think it's hard to know, Jeff, what their exact exact outcome is going to be yet. Like, I think they're going to offer their opinions. I don't think they're going to be shy, but it's hard to say, you know, what that means yet, right? To me, the most fascinating thing to me is, in a year from now, do those guys say, you know what, we'd love to be the GM of this team?
Yes.
We'd love to be the GM. Are these guys one guy? What are they sharing a salary? What is happening?
Justin? I like that one has a beard and one doesn't, because now I've got a chance.
Yeah.
Yeah. Until they switch it up.
But that's where I want to go with this. Like, this is a duo that's always, you know, made history by being together. Do we see the first, you know, somewhere down the road here, duo general manager?
Why not?
Oh, no. Listen, Vancouver's flouted conventionality before. Roberto Luongo was made captain. Let's not forget. Like, this wouldn't be new territory for the Vancouver Canucks. I'm just saying, I just like to get it out there on the floor as a discussion point and sort of chum the waters for, I think this could happen one day. And I don't think we should be surprised.
Put it this way. If those guys decide somewhere down the road that they want to be co-GMs or GM or whatever, do you think that if they – and they're not guys who cut corners. Like, they're going to do the work. Do you see a reason why they can't do it?
No, and I see this as their opportunity to get inside the organization, you know, have a look under the hood of the Chevy here and see what's going on, see how it all works, see how everything works together. And then one day – they make the move, someone makes the move for them, who knows, all of a sudden the NHL has their first twin general manager situation.
It would be awesome.
It would be very cool.
I have to text them, which one do I call about trade rumors?
Yeah, one confirms and one denies. That'll be great.
But what if they get fired and one of them throws the other one under the bus and they just fire the one? Then that's going to be a big problem. But that's a problem for later.
The Murrays, yes.
On to the Tampa page here. Game 7 with the Islanders in Tampa here. They'll be maybe without Kucherov with the cross checks, but it just seems every single year the media just seems to point the finger and the microscope under some infraction. This year's the cross checks. What's your take on cross checks, and do you think it's a little bit overblown with the attention it's getting this year?
Well, judging from the question you just asked me, I think I know what your answer is. You think it's overblown, Ann?
Yep.
Okay. Well, here's what I think. I think that I don't think cross-checking necessarily is as big deal as the boarding. Like, I think boarding is something that they have to crack down on. I think it's gotten to be too much, because I think you're risking like a serious injury. We've seen it before, and, you know, hopefully we never see it again. That's the one. Like I look at some of the stuff that happened in with Montreal Vegas game four. The thing that annoyed me as a viewer and a fan is that like some of those boardings were not being called, and then we had that hook on the hands, and I was like, really? So boarding to me is a bigger concern. Cross checking for me, Anthony, is to me like they had a meeting this year where cross checking came up, and I actually kind of understood what the conversation was. To me, it's all about if there's cross-checking in front of the net, they feel that there should be a little bit more of allowing for a battle there. Okay. They also feel if a cross-check is a push, then there should be a little bit more allowance for that. But if a cross-check comes down with force, that's what they don't like. Well, last night that one, Anthony, was not in front of the net. And it was down with force. Now, I will say I've had some disputing this morning on my phone, like just texting back and forth about when Kucherov got hurt. I have some people telling me he got hurt on the cross check. I have some people claiming he didn't get hurt on the cross check. I don't know what's true. So, but Anthony, I just think that like we want our superstars to play. People are going to get hurt. Nobody's 100% in the playoffs, but tomorrow night for game seven, I want to see the Islanders and Lightning go at it with their best rosters. And I just don't think that what happened last night is what we would want. You guys can tell me if you think I'm nuts.
No, I think this is going to be part of the conversation in the offseason, not unlike the stick around the hands, which they've kept the standard high on. I wonder if we get there with cross checks, and specifically, I'll sort of marry your other point, cross checks around the boards, because I think we're starting to see the beginning of the end of board hitting in general. But we got to go, and I will tell you one thing before we let you go. I don't know if this is thanks to the arsonists, but Bruce Boudreau is trending right now on Twitter. So make of that what you will, Elliot Friedman. Enjoy the game tonight.
I think I just heard there's a fire station like right around the corner for me. I think I just heard like their fifth alarm go off.
I love it. Thanks, Friedman. We'll be watching tonight.
All right, guys. Take care.
Thanks,
Friedman. There is Elliot Friedman from Hockey Night in Canada and 31 Thoughts. 7:30 is the pregame. Puck drops at 8 at the Bell Center. Montreal looking to punch their ticket to the Stanley Cup final. Wow. More Hockey Central. Sportsnet 590, The Fan, in a moment. Let's just hope they both have fun. It's the Vegas Golden Knights and the Montreal Canadiens tonight. Pregame 7:30, puck drops at the Bell Center just after 8 o'clock. Anthony Stewart, first word in last words to you. Tonight, Game 6, the Habs could close this thing out. Stewie.
Yeah, I think the key for the Montreal Canadiens, they got to have a good start at home, get pucks in deep, as they say. But for Vegas, that power play, they got to try to get on the power play 4 or 5 times, play heavy hockey, get in front of Carey Price if they have an opportunity. If not, Habs in 6, as they say, en français.
Yeah. C'est bien. Justin.
Vegas has to find their patience. Like, they have to remember that Montreal has to score too. You know, like, it's not just a matter of them forcing it and trying. You got to defend as well and wait for your chances.
Do you not think, though, that it's house on fire for Vegas in those first 10 minutes? Do they not need to come out screaming?
Yep.
Leonard versus Price. Enjoy it tonight at the Bell Center. Smith and Jones next on The Fan.